This program was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.
Hello and welcome to the penultimate episode of The Street Down Memory Lane, the series where we bring you on a walking tour of one of Ireland's oldest and most historical towns, stopping off to speak with some local characters and historians along the way, while also visiting some landmark buildings. The series so far has taken a look back at the Yall of yesterday and compared it with the Yall of today, documenting the changing face of the town from the 1950s onwards, as we heard how retail and manufacturing side of town has evolved.
And who do I bump into first along the street here? It's John McGrath. John would have had the distinction of living not literally on the street, because he was over the street. His house straddled the street because he lived in the Clockgate Tower. So good morning, John. How are you?
I'm very well, Liam. How are you yourself? Nice to meet you.
Thank you. So tell me about living on North Main Street and living in the Clock Tower. And you were born there, I believe.
I was. I was born there in 1939. I always had a choice, you know, when the town leagues were on for the GAA, because I could choose whether I wanted to play with the South or the North.
Or the North, you know. Yeah. But, or yeah. East and West, even.
East and West, exactly.
You could go do that as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I suppose my grandfather moved in there in 1915. He was a caretaker there. His duties were to wind the clock and call out the fire brigade. And as time went on, then my grandfather passed on and the duties were handed to my mother and father. And my mother came from a place in West Cork called Timmalee. Mm. We had four children. My eldest sister was an invalid, and another sister, and my brother and myself. The conditions in the Clockgate were no different, I'd say, to a lot of other households in Yall, with the dampness and the cold and what had you. But as regards living in the Clockgate and in the area, it was a hive of activity. People that I'd go to school with and that I was very friendly with, the powers of the Clockgate, they were known as well, owns chemist shop,
yeah.
And Brian owns married Noron,
yes.
And who would have been a TD.
Grandniece of Michael Collins, I believe.
Correct. And then you had the other shops up along Muckley's, and a shop that was, I suppose, the centre of activity would have been Pasley's. Pasley's, their sweet shop, their bakery, everything. Across the road, you had Merrick's. Merrick's was a tremendous shop because they catered for shoes and suits and ladies' clothes and ladies' shoes and anything you wanted, Merrick's was the place to go. They had a unique system of paying for whatever article you bought there, in as much as that the person behind the counter, only they handed the money, they put it into a receipt, then they sent it into a type of a timber ball and sent it on a chute, and it went all the way back to the office. And you were standing waiting for this, and of course the conversation went on, and the next thing the change came back and down onto the same place again. And it was a fantastic system. All the staff in Merrick's then, they lived overhead.
That added to the street as
it
well.
It certainly did. They tell me that people that lived there, actually their parents paid for them to be trained in shopkeeping and all that type of stuff. We had a gentleman then that in 1947, I think it was, he opened a jewelry shop where Sage Restaurant is now.
Yes.
And he was known as Hans Manhausen.
Yes.
He was a German. He was a character, much like John Kennedy's shop. It's amazing now that the amount of people that called into him. But of course, he was a very knowledgeable man, and probably we were all hungry for information as to what was happening in Germany and so forth, you know.
Yeah.
People said maybe that he might be a spy, you know. He brought one boy over from Germany. Him and I were put together as regards to be made friends. We went to school. I remember we were in the second class. Brother Crinigan was teaching us, and Brother Crinigan was a tough man, you know. But the leather was frequently used, you know. I don't think he understood about this leather, so he got his slaps and he had the leather. And we went down, if you can remember, the schoolyard was right across the road.
Yes.
And that's where we'd play for the break. We were down the yard one day and he said to me we would go up to the classroom. So I didn't know what he was doing. He went into the classroom and I down to the desk, took out the leather, under his jumper, back down the street, down to the end, and the black water was flowing out, and he caught the leather and threw it in the big investigation then as to what happened to the leather. Well, it was never found out. That's a mystery that they'll never know about.
Well, you've solved the mystery today. Maureen Potter used to refer to the Christian Brothers as having leathers growing out of their hands.
Thank God they did, yeah.
You were involved with Moby Dick, the filming of Moby Dick in 1954.
I went to school until I was 14 years of age. I went to work in Seafield Fabrics in 53. So 54, I was nearly a year working in Seafield. I was not somebody who was looking to become an extra. Every kid in town, that was their ambition, to be involved. When a scene was taking place, in Barry's Lane especially, they'd cordoned the place off with ropes, and the Gardaí and local people were hired to keep the crowds back, and there was a lot of people there. I had a bird's eye view. It was fantastic to see behind the scenes, you know. One particular scene now is, and I can't remember the name of the character now, but he was to go into a Spouter's Inn, which was a pub, and they had a huge fan, and the fire brigade were engaged to have a hose ready, and this fan was started up. The hose was sprayed in front of it, and it looked as if there was a storm. Before the film star would do his piece, they had about maybe, they must have had five or six extras, and they sent them into the Spouter's Inn. This is the way we want it done. And I was amazed how a shot, afterwards looking at it on film, was only maybe a couple of minutes, and it took hours to do it.
After catching up now with Ken Brooks and Norman MacDonald, you have a strong association with the North Main Street.
Absolutely. Our family have been connected with the North Main Street in Youghal, going way back to about 1888, when my grandfather would have come from West Cork as a young lad, about 11, and he came to serve as apprenticeship with Pasley and Company Limited, which was there on the main street there. It's across from Merrick's. Staying then up above where Eddie Irwin's shop is at the moment, there was a boarding house up there, so he stayed up there. He worked away there for a few years. Pasley's would have been a food business. There was a bakery there. You'd go in and you'd pull up a chair and give your orders and stuff like that, and to be all written down, and then off you go. Everything was sold loose biscuits, loose tea, loose everything, and that. Mr. Pasley, anyhow, he was working away with him, and he got on well, and around the turn of the century then, coming up towards early 1900s, Mr. Pasley decided that he was going to go to Dublin and sell the business, because he wanted to open a laundry business up there in Dublin. The name of the laundry business was actually called the Swastika Laundry Business, which was an unusual choice of name, but in 1907 or something, it was fine.
It was innocent.
So he approached then, my grandfather had worked his way up to being a manager, and those two managers, himself and Mr. Cathcart. So the two of them decided they'd buy the business from Mr. Pasley, and they did. Mr. Cathcart passed away in 1921, and my grandfather bought out the business from his widow, and then it's been in the family since then. When I was born in 1952, that's a state secret, it's no longer a state secret, but anyway, I used to live over the shop, so I would have only been living about less than 100 yards from where John was living over the clock 8, and so we lived there for about 10 years. And then we convert those into flats, and I moved out to where my grandfather had built a house in Park Home. I always remember living on the main street. There was lots of people there. Every house was occupied. Every shop was open. There were so many different types of shops, so many small shops. It's hard to imagine. All around the area, I remember characters like Cecil Pratt, who had a hardware shop down below where Luigi's is there at the moment. Right. Below the clock 8, Maison Fox used to cut my hair. A fierce character. They were everywhere. But it was a lovely community, because people were living there. There was very few cars, and everybody looked out for each other, and we were very, very happy. We actually had one part of the house where we had just bare boards, and we had chickens in there, and that's where we used to keep chickens and get the eggs and stuff like that. So it was totally different times. Across the road from me, Dr. Gowan and his wife were living there for a while, where the coffee pot is now.
1952.
Yeah, and I say Gordon Good then was taking over Merrick's across the road.
I remember when I be heading home from school and that, coming up along the main street, it used to be always great to see Pasley's old man up in the window at Christmas time. Right, yeah. You know Christmas was coming when Pasley's old man came up.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
And yeah. It's lovely to see him on display again.
That's right, yeah. Well, in fact, Kay Carton has been very good, and since we moved up to our new premises in the old LNN, she looks at and she has him out every Christmas, and he's still going strong. Still going strong.
After how many years now?
He goes back, he was brought in from Germany as, it was a toy originally, about 1850. Made in Germany, and so he's there a long time, and he's been in the family certainly from their very early 1900s. My father spent most of his Christmases trying to keep him going.
Yeah.
And because it's all kind of like little clocks and springs and things at the back and stuff like that, and wires and pulleys and that. But no, he's still going, and I remember one Christmas, he couldn't get him going, and he put a sign up and he said, sorry, Paz's old man has the flu, and so it wasn't working. So he was up the front door, and there was a chap called Nigel Murray, who was a very English gentleman who was married to Shirley Arbuthnot from Myrtle Grove. And he was there, and he's come home on Christmas. He said, Mr. Brooks, he said, how are you? It's good to see you, he said. I thought you had the flu.
Tell me about your connection with North Main Street. What you remember growing up and all of that.
Well, to start off with, I remember this young man playing ball out on the flat roof of the back of Pasley's. Because we didn't have a flat roof, we had a valley between the what used to be the old stores in T.P. Walsh's at that time. Growing up in Norman Street, as Ken has already said, there was a great, you know, you'd Miss Barrett, the Muckley family, you'd Joss Owens. Joss Owens used to play the bloomin' trumpet there at 11 o'clock at night, and my bedroom was right beside Joss's playroom for playing. Now, he's known as Brian, but we all know him as Joss. You know, there were some absolutely brilliant people. You know, you had Westbury's across the road. He used to play the organ up in St. Mary's. A fantastic organist. You know, you had Jan Houston, the fella, the German. Who used to live down there at the very first one by the steps up. You know, like you had Pat Power. Pat Power would be, he would be related to the Powers across the road. He'd be a cousin. I think he's a cousin of hers. I'm trying to remember, but a fierce IRA man,
right?
You know. But the interesting thing is that I remember it must have been about 1953. Westbury's were doing up their the floor in the building, and they came across, as they dug up, they came across this big well. And apparently there was a bakery there way back in the 1800s, you know, and like a lot of people don't realize it, but like there was actually about 10 different bakeries in town. But when they dug up the floor and this well appeared, and they looked down into the well, and here was stacked up, here's full of guns from the 1798 rebellion. So the lads said, let's fill this up quickly. In T.P. Walsh's now, for example, where the window for the barber is now.
Yeah.
That used to be an alleyway.
Yes.
There was actually only two windows in the early 50s, only two windows. George got the contract for the gas company,
Keller.
Yes. And way back in the 50s. So we needed an extra window to show off the ovens and the cookers and all that for the modern housewife had to have these, of course. And so they put this new window in. But when they were digging the foundations of the window, they came across the cobbles. So the old man said, that's interesting. So they dug all the way back. You kind of go into where the barber is now, to the back window. They dug all the way down. And there's actually the angle of an old docking port in there under that premises. Oh. And it's still there. And apparently, when you went back to the very early days of shops in Yall, they actually all had these little mini ports for bringing in, rowing up their produce, right, into the shops. And like, it is still there, buried. Picture I showed you there a minute ago, the Cashmans in it. Yeah. There's Mary Cashman, Kitty Fleming. They worked in T.P. Walsh's with us. And like, there's a lot of the lads there, and I'm trying to remember their names. But unfortunately, like, when you're going back to the 50s, try to remember all the names of the different O'Connells and all the rest that worked with us. The last time that Merrick's monument was opened up in the graveyard was around 1952, and they actually buried the old gentleman that was from the shoe department.
I said, we're going and show me all in sport clothes, like you supposed to. He said, well, sure, come on in, buddy, dig these fabrics we got laid out on the shelf. He said,
pick yourself out one, try it on, stand in the mirror and dig yourself.
As I walk further up the street now, I'm just after bumping into Jim Coleman.
Look here, you.
here at the top of Ninth Street, or yeah. as it's known better than the town, DSB Lane.
DSB Lane is what it was always known as.
That's it. How are you, Jim?
I am fine.
You'd know the street now, going up and down to the Christian Brothers
school,
I suppose.
Yeah, I'm born and raised in it, all the changes time. Along there. Yeah.
As we walk up along the street.
When I was a young lad, where Calflebans is now, were Keane Brothers.
All right.
Keane's, there was Keane's Hardware.
Hardware.
And next door to Keane's then, I'm just thinking, there was Forrest Bakery, and they used to bake all their own bread. There were several, there was a family of them, they had a, down the South Main Street as well, the bakery down there.
I remember the Forrest Bakery in the South Main Street, I don't remember it in,
there was,
North
there was,
Main Street,
there was.
But I've heard of it.
The next place was Jimmy McGowan.
Jimmy McGowan
had a drapery business there. You had Doyle's across the road.
There was a lot of hardware shops in the town.
There was. You had Doyle's and...
You had Doyle's and you had Keane's and you had T.P. Welsh's.
You had
Watson's further up.
There was quite a lot of them around, there was indeed.
Yeah, the old post office was here.
The old post office was there where Cal Flebbins' shoe shop, which unfortunately has just closed down. That was the old post office. Next door to that office was Fields. Next door to Fields then, I'm not too sure who was there. Then further up, you'd another drapery, Gould's.
Gould's drapery, yes.
Above that, then you had another drapery, very old, Toomey's.
Toomey's
right. was along there. Yeah. You come along there then, and then you had the Yellin' Inn.
The London and Newcastle.
London and Newcastle.
And lots of people don't know what L&N stands L&N for.
Exactly, London and Newcastle.
Yeah.
Next door to the L&N, then you had Joe Green's pub. No, Mackey's.
That
was Joe Green's.
Yes.
Then at the corner, you had a solicitor. Just there that, as you go down Shambles Lane.
Yeah.
Then at the other side, you had a... I'm not too sure, but I can remember at a later date, a chap named Paddy Carroll. He had a barber shop there. He also was working further down on the South Main Street. But he transferred, he was working for somebody there then, but he transferred to himself. Next door to that then, there was another family, Morgan, the late Morgan O'Connor's aunt lived there. It was Morgan's. Then you'll Cole's. There was a shop there then, there was a tailor. He was work up top.
All right.
And there was one of the Sullivan, Mossy Sullivan, I think he was a cobbler. He'd the downstairs part. It was a tailor up, so I'm going way back to the 40s normally. We go back as far as Shambles Lane, directly across the Justin Condon at showrooms there.
Yes.
Galvin's, the old man.
Yes.
Next door to that, and the other was Moss Kelly. He was directly across the road from Morgan's. Then there was a big yard there, and I can remember there was a brother and sister. They had a business in there, and he used to go, he had a horse and cart, he used to go off around the country selling sugar, tea and all that kind of thing. Well, across down from Morgan's, so opposite Coles then, your Collins's. Then across there was an old dwelling there. A woman by the name of Green used to live there.
Right.
That was directly opposite Coles now. Then you had Bobby Chapel. Come up there then where that chap Keith the plumber was. Directly across the road, whose ends. Underneath that house then, the shop, the late John Kennedy started business in the town of Yall. He worked for a chap named Colum Maloney in Dungarvan. Colum's shop was the name of it.
Yes.
I used to do a lot of business with John at the time. That's where I first got to know John Kennedy.
Across the road then you had the Munster and Leinster.
Munster and Leinster Bank. Then next door to the Munster and Leinster Bank you had Ryan's Pub. Directly across the road, as I say, where the late Keith the plumber lived, with the family living there. There was a great, the big archway still there. They had a car for hire and that was their garage. Then across the road next door to Ryan's, you had Madge Herney's. Across the road from Madge Herney, there was a Mrs. Heller and she was a dressmaker. Right. You had Dempsey's.
Yes.
Noel Dempsey did all the milk.
Did
a paper shop.
Thomas's
paper originally,
shop. Yes.
Exactly.
That's right.
Next door to Thomas's, then you had Jimmy Buck.
Yes.
And there was a kind of a yard there then, I don't know who used to have that. I think it was vacant.
Yeah, that was.
Or did Farrell's.
I think Farrell's across the road.
I think there's something to do with that. And then you had Jimmy Buck's.
Yes.
And then you had a house that's not there today. It was demolished to make way for the two-way traffic. It was Paddy Lynch. Lynch's.
Yes.
Sally Lynch and all them.
Right.
They lived in a house that no longer there. It is.
Oh, yes.
It's knocked down.
There they were.
And then next door to that, nowhere at the end of Cross Lane now. Now, next door to that, there was a derelict building which during the war was a soup kitchen. They used to give soup there during the war. That later was... When the old post office was closed down, they built a new post office on that site. The soup kitchen,
and
of course, the Bank of Ireland.
The Bank of Ireland.
And then you had Morrissey's Garage.
Morrissey's Garage, yeah. And across the road, and of course, you had the famous Presto, Bobby Bickerdike. He was across the road, Professor Presto.
Yeah,
that's right.
John Kennedy is the last mercenary. John Shop then, that changed hands so many times. I remember Paddy Maher, the late Paddy Maher, had a shop there.
Yeah, he's the man that was out in the pub in town.
Exactly, same man.
Very good.
He had a shop there. A very nice lad by the name of McMahon. He later married the Pat.
Remember Pat used to be on the radio.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
And next door to Morrissey's garage, you had Mooney Connery's butcher shop.
Yes.
We are now at the end of De Valera Street.
William Street, as it was known. Coming up along the street now further, and who do I meet? Only Michael Beecher, across the road there from his own yard, where he ran a coal business for many, many years. So how are you, Michael?
I guess it's good to meet you, Liam. Do you fancy meeting you here with all these fancy tires?
You ran a coal business across over there for many years.
Right. My father started, actually. He bought moors and he made apartments out of the actual building, and he started his coal business inside there.
Yeah.
I was only young for at the time, probably about 11 or 12, give or take. He used to get the coal loose and tip it up inside, and then he built a ramp going up to a bunker. Then I was then underneath the bunker as he was filling it, and I was stacking the coal. How I wasn't split open, I'll never know, but anyway.
So you bagged by hand, basically?
Well, it wasn't lit by shovel, but still had to be handled. Stacked.
All right.
And that was before we even delivered it, so there was a lot of work involved before it went out to the customer. And there were 100-weight bags in as well, and then they were all open, and so there was a knack in carrying it. I spilled a lump of coal out of a bag. That was a big sin, like. I had the art of carrying the bag without losing a lump of coal going into bunkers around the town, so... Yeah.
And you'd be able to tip it over off your back, I presume.
Oh, yeah, but I was only young at the time. But, I mean, these were wobbling underneath me. You can rest assured I was a frail lad, but I wasn't long getting strong into the game. But I loved it. From the word go, I just wanted to be out in the open. You can imagine, a 13-year-old today, not going to school, there would be questions asked, but I pleaded and pleaded with my mother, because there was no point in pleading with the old fellow, because he wanted me to have an education, good enough. Next thing I wanted to do was go behind the wheel, so I had to wait until I was 18, and he showed me the ropes, and of course the crack was 90, Farrell's were alongside me, and Ernie Farrell, and he had the business in the town at the time, But my father had the shop, as you know, at 10 North Main Street.
10 North Main Street,
So he started off his business there. He came in from Tallow. Yeah. And my mother's from Yall, from up there in Ballyvergan, the farm place, home place.
Yes.
And he was a radio officer. And so he came into town in uniform. So I don't know about the love at first sight, but anyway, but she often says she sailed into it, her life, and he sailed out of it, her life.
Yeah.
Because he died when he was 78 after a Mediterranean cruise.
All right.
So that's why she said he sailed out.
I remember them there in number 10, but I also remember they bought two shops up further, at the end of Cock Lane, as it used to be known.
Fleming's Corner, known as back then, as you know.
Yes.
And he started off at number 10 North Main Street. That was Torpy's, and he started the business there. He was a mighty hard worker, and right up to the end, in fairness to him. And he was going out to the country and bring back fresh produce from the people that grew vegetables, potatoes, carrots. People were delighted to get fresh produce. And so he was getting up fairly early. And then he had hens up in the back, a Trojan worker.
Yeah.
And I was born upstairs, number 10. Well, I don't remember, but I was weighed in the scales in the shop, whether that's true or not. And then you had Bertie's across the road,
and Liam.
The old chatter there at night used to be mighty out of Jason, would be better than any Carnation Street. The singing and the dancing, and anyway, wouldn't that much dancing, like. But then you could hear an old nod crash here and there, and every fella get an old blow. Like, I was looking out the window, it'd be fascinating with all this,
Of course, that was in the days when the street wasn't as busy as
traffic-wise. That's right.
It was a lot busier commercial-wise, because there was nearly every shop or every house had some kind of a business.
There would all be families, Liam, as you know yourself.
Yeah.
There were six of us. And my parents and my grandmother, that was nine people in one house, and the Nevilles, there was a big crowd to begin, and then your cousins.
Yes.
And down along the line, they should, and the Traces at the other end, where we are now, like, they
yeah,
were,
yeah,
they
yeah.
were, they, he was another great businessman again, like, he all started business from scratch.
There was a great work ethic that time anyway.
Unbelievable, yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. like even, like, if you didn't finish school, you walked straight into a job around that time, like, you know, like, the campus was a great take, and the Seafield factories, Blackwaters. Like, the town was buzzing.
It was, and of course, that time too, you could walk out of one job on a Friday and
that's
walk
right.
into another one and
I was connected to Noddy Kennedy outside Blackwater's cottons outside after doing nights, and he'd do a day's work with me father.
All right.
Yeah, chicks, they were mighty men, like. Mm-hmm. Mick Maher, he started off with me father when he had the hens up inside in the bag. Mm-hmm. Yeah, chicks, he's hundreds of hens up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Chicks, I hated going down to them bloody sheds and the dust made me choking for the bloody buggers. I hate the bloody hens that
yeah.
when I was young, for I can tell you.
Yeah, but yeah. Of course, you wouldn't get away with that today.
Not
with the
at all, they were all in cages.
And the loose coal and all of that, and the dust.
Oh, there was no such thing as health and safety. I remember when Cal Flaherty bought a forklift, and I'd say I was about 18 or 19, maybe 20 at the time.
Yeah.
And I thought, what the name of Jesse spending that kind of money on a fucking machine going to be lying idle? So just, you can't open a yard without a forklift today.
No, no.
You know?
Yeah.
So, like, what I to be taught was the funniest thing ever. So we were the donkeys.
Yeah.
You know, why would you need a factor when you could lift it yourself?
When
you match your men, like, which was all bravo.
Yeah.
You know, should I have two artificial limbs out of it, and asthma, and God, and arthritis out of it? So,
yeah.
Like, but so look, that's it. It is.
That's it.
But like before that, Liam, you remember the older people, and they were all stooge.
They were.
Should they have spent 15, 20 stone and great and got up into grain stores? Like, it was cruelty. But they know no less. They know. They
yeah,
know
yeah,
no.
They,
Thank
they
God know. I wasn't brought up in that era. would I be here at all?
Yeah.
I wouldn't, because I'd be probably nearly 100 at this stage.
This is the last great love song that I will ever sing to you. And this is the last great love song that I will ever bring.
Pop in here to number 11 North Main Street, Willie Neville's shop, being looked after now by my two cousins, Anne and Pauline. How are you girls?
We're great. And as on the day you're in, as you're doing the interview today, the business is actually open 74 years today. 1st
today.
Of November, our father opened it.
That'd be good to Willie. He died
40 years ago this year.
40 years ago, yeah.
This year, yeah.
It's frightening where the time goes.
Yeah, it's amazing how
the
town has changed. Daddy bought this place in 1945, he opened it. He did a deposit paid on a place across the road, which I think is Pines, and this place came up.
Yeah.
Right.
So he bought this place for a huge sum of £1,200. It was the dearest shop in the street at the time. About 2 years later, then had the van, and he used to have the store below in the castle, and he had, actually there was a passageway at the back of our place. He used to have store over in the shed, but Dan wanted to was buying next door, but he was going in the van that morning, so Daddy went down and bid on it for him, and that was £800. And 2 or 3 years later, Clark's went for sale for £100, and I remember Mary saying to Daddy one time, why didn't she buy it? Well, he said we couldn't afford it anymore. We were after buying two premises.
And you see, times were so different. We couldn't perceive the idea of that they would not have had £100. The value of money was so different.
We put a new hall door in 3 years ago,
and
it was €1,600.
So that tells
the house was £1,200.
That tells the difference.
We lived here, and Beechert lived at one side, and McCarthy's at the other side, and Dempsey's across the road. My childhood memory of here is every day I went down the street to Kathleen Long at number 17. She had a sweet shop. And that was my outing every day, where I went down and stood on a chair and sang every day.
Now that you say it, I used to go a fairly regular. Mrs. Parker at number 7 had a cow down the passageway across the road down the slab, and she'd be milking the cow, and I used to go down with her and she'd be milking the cow some days. I remember going into Beecher's when they had the big square boxes. They'd be like 2 foot deep and wide, and you go in, you buy your half pound of biscuits or your quarter pound. There was nothing in the packet of biscuits when we were
That's
small.
Right, with all loose
you went
biscuits.
In all loose biscuits, and you bought your. I can still remember seeing
That's
them
right.
on the on the shop.
And the counter, indeed.
Or at the shop here. I mean, Daddy always had a camera and took photos, but he never took a photo of the inside of the shop. Because I remember, like, on one wall there, we had rolls of suiting, all the material, and people get their suit made then.
Yeah.
And I remember Mammy, I often helped her get the pocket lining and the buttons for the braces and the buttons for the different buttons for the sleeves.
I did take up the street into Bransfield, who lived up there, just beyond to Herne's.
Next to a Herne's.
Mrs. Bransfield was a tailor, and he would make your suit to measure.
And across the road then, the Fair Day, that was the Fair Field across the road. I actually have a photograph inside of it, taken from either here or next door.
Yeah.
Of the Fair Field, and there'd be a fair there, all the animals would be there. And I remember our daddy telling us in the morning, the farmer, they'd come in, and he'd come in and he'd make the deal. He wanted a coat and maybe a suit and a pair of boots or whatever, and he'd say in the morning how much, and he'd go away then, and he might come back at lunchtime and say, could you do any bit better on that? And then we'd have all these animals sold in the evening. He'd come back and buy what he wanted and pay for them and take them home. And then I remember Mammy saying, one time, the time of the fairs, we have an apple tree up the back, one of the apple trees, and the doors were all open, and a goat ran right through the shop, out the back door, and skinned the tree. And do you believe, I'd say it took 25 years for that tree to come back to life. And another time she said there was a calf went through the shop. Yeah, just an escape, like.
Escaped from the fair. From the fair.
Yeah.
Of course, after the fair, then they'd be walking the cattle back home.
Out to the train station. They'd come and deliver then on a tractor and trailer. The stuff would be delivered in the train, and for the shop, and they'd bring them in the tractor and trailer, and they'd be delivered.
Before that was the horse and trailer.
And Mary Neville
Brown
then, they
used to
Jack Brown used to drive.
They used to bring the milk to town then, wasn't they?
No, Jack Brown drove the station from the railway station. Flavin's brought the milk to town.
So Flavin's brought
would
the milk to town.
Would be Pat Flavin's father and Denny Flavin's
grandfather.
So the Fair Day was a big event, and that's where it got the name the Fair Field. Now that was before Dominic Collins' place was built.
And of course, you have Dominic Collins, the north gate of the town.
The north gate of the town is our yard door, and that is where Dominic Collins was martyred in 1602.
On the 31st of October,
because he would not deny his faith and swear allegiance to the Queen at the time. He was actually hung, drawn and quartered, and is supposed to be buried somewhere in the vicinity, which is unknown. When the circus had come to town, we'll say before our time in the 40s, they had a tradition of they'd walk in from
do
the bridge.
I remember that.
Yeah, well,
I remember getting up early in the morning and going to the top bedroom of the house, of the top room, and looking out the window, and the elephants would be walking down the street, and the tigers would be in open cages.
Yes, and I remember Marion Fawcett's father coming in here, Fawcett, and Duffy's and all, they'd all come in when they'd be in town, and whether it was from being young or what, they all seemed to be very colourful characters. They were kind of different.
They were very different.
They kind of wore brighter clothes, or they were just, perhaps they were quite extrovert too, which was a huge novelty, the circus. And everyone went to the circus then.
Oh, yeah.
I suppose it's the only thing on, really.
Just after bumping into Mary Linehan Foley here, you weren't on the North Main Street, but I'm sure
you often travelled. I was near enough to it, I suppose, because where I was exactly living was, I suppose, from in Market Square, Moby Dick's, obviously, but that would have been veering me on up the Clock Eight and
that
onto the main street.
Yeah.
So I suppose, really, basically, I grew up, and North Main Street would have been a playground of mine, and I suppose my memories would be similar. You'd have T.P. Welch's, you'd have Pasley's, and you'd have Merrick's. I suppose another bit of a playground for me would have been up by the parish church, along that area, because we would have played quite a lot up there. You know, y'all, I suppose back in my day, Liam, similar to yourself, we'd be around similar age, I'd say.
About.
You know, you'd be allowed out to play, and you'd be out till the street lights went off,
and then
you had to come in, and it was as simple as that. But you'd continue on, and you'd have McGuan's shop there up along. I remember Mary Kennedy's been brought
there
to buy my clothes.
And Christy Toig.
Christy
next door,
Toig, that's right. And even if you continue, Cal McCarty's shop, newsagents, where you'd Enid Blyton books, and after Mass on a Sunday, you'd come down there from the parish church and you'd be brought in to get a comic or to get one of them books.
Yeah.
And I suppose up along there, you'd Liam Noonan's, the famous Liam Noonan, of course.
Liam Noonan, yes,
and
indeed.
You'd always be brought in there for your sweets. you always, I suppose, as well continuing on from up there, you'd move on, I suppose, from there, and you'd be going up where the LNN was, across from, we'd say, Cal McCarthy's paper shop.
Yes, yes.
And again, you were brought in there for your few sweets as well. You'd Sammy Adams.
Yes.
Get indeed. Your shoes fixed. You'd continue
There's
on up along.
There was a lot of cobblers in town.
There was a lot of cobblers, but I suppose back then, you probably got your shoes fixed rather than being brought to buy a new pair. It was maybe cheaper to get them fixed than to...
Well, I suppose the stuff was in them and they could be fixed.
Yes. Whereas nowadays, they're more wear them a few times and dump them type of a thing.
Yeah.
And they talk about, you know, they're about recycling and about the environment. I think we were actually better in our stage for the environment than anyone else.
All of it at that time, it was everything, the glass bottles went back to the manufacturer. You were doing it below in Linehan's as well. We were doing it outside. The bottles all went back and they were all reused, the milk bottles and the lemonade bottles and the whole lot, and the stout bottles, they were all reused. And
they were, and like that, the shoes were as well, and there you go. Nowadays, what do? They go in, they buy another pair, and shoes are stacking up or whatever. We had fun times, and I'm just thinking there, as we're walking up, we'd say the North Main Street further up along, you went up then and you had Nelson Coles. There was a chemist inside there, I remember.
That's right, yeah.
And you'd go in there for your prescriptions. You know, we quite a lot of chemists actually back
we had, in the day, as well. Again, we had Burke's further up.
Yeah. Now, I remember, and I'm not too sure what was on following on from that. I can remember back in the 80s and 90s, Kieran Curley had a shop there where that new blow shop is now, the vape shop or whatever, puff and stuff. There was Kieran Curley had a shop there where he sold football gear and toys and stuff like that. But actually, going back in the day, I can't remember what was there.
I'm not sure.
And you'd the plumber next door.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Basically, then when you went more, you'd Swain's Cobblers.
That's right.
And that's still
down
there.
Down in Brown Street.
That's right. Down that's in Brown right. Street, and that's still there.
That was a narrow street that time. Because
very narrow.
And then they knocked a couple of houses.
That's
to,
right. To widen it. To widen it. Yeah. So I mean, there is, like, if you look at the streetscape of Yall and you look at the main street north and south, and even down along, as we call the back street, the Mall area, and that, there's quite an awful lot of changes to.
Huge changes
to the road
even in our time.
Yeah,
similar age, but we're not that far back.
No, we're not. No. We're more, I kind of like to say to my kids at home, we're more 80s than we are 70s or 60s, really.
Right.
Like, I was born myself in 1966, but certainly I'd prefer to think of myself as a more of an 80s. They're kind of where you go back to and what it was.
Yeah.
And there was another shop now, Liam, when you, Flavin Shoe Shop was always there, of course. And if you cross the road from that, there was Shaheen's. It was a kind of
a fashion shop. That's right,
that was there where the dog rescue. And where Max Grove is, there was another fashion shop up there. Max Grove Furniture.
Across from Clark's? Yeah, I remember Max Grove being a garage.
Oh God, I don't know, Liam.
Morrissey's garage.
I don't remember that. But funny now when you say it, I can remember petrol pumps and the street, all right.
Yeah.
You had Clark's Shoes, of course, where everybody went for their shoes. There are Flavin's.
Yeah.
And that was, you had Leonard, in fairness to Leonard Clark.
And Maisie Redmond.
Maisie Redmond, that's right. And in Liam Noonan's, what was the lady's name in Liam Noonan's?
Madge Harney.
There you go. There are a lot of names there now bringing back memories, Liam,
that's for sure. I think that about wraps up this leg of our journey. Before we finish up, though, I want to get a few final thoughts from our guests.
Do you remember Lila Herron?
Yeah.
A novelty shop there. And no such thing as Lila trying to have a Christmas dinner. She was everybody knocking at the door looking for caps.
Yeah.
There was their own caps, and then you get a ring of them, and they'd be all bang, bang.
Oh, yeah. great days indeed. Horgan Cinema was absolutely brilliant. I remember going in there, and we'd be up the back, and the whole thing was you get a bottle of Club Orange or something like that, and when you finish at a quiet part, if you let it roll, she'd come up by, and I tell you, the Gestapo had nothing on her. You'd be in serious trouble. Oh,
that's right.
This is like barbed wire.
Oh, serious.
Quite up in the gods.
Exactly.
And the legal was the same. The legal.
It was
a wonderful time.
There was a season for everything at that time, you know.
Yeah.
come the autumn time, the conkers for the chestnuts.
It was a big thing.
And there was a time for playing marbles on the street.
That's right.
Yeah.
There was a time for fag cards.
Yeah.
There was a time for fishing for mackerel.
Yeah.
There was a time when we made tents, you know. And we always seemed to have lots and lots to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Always just waiting to get out of school.
That's right.
Forget about the homework.
Yeah.
Get that's at right. The playing.
The pitching pass used not be played along the street.
Yeah,
as
that's
well.
Right.
Well, in the time when you could, when there was the traffic wasn't as busy as it is today.
I think that's one of the things that people don't realise nowadays is that just how few cars there actually were. I mean, there was traffic was both ways. There was never any traffic jams.
Donkeys and buses.
Yeah, they weren't.
There's a very, very funny story. One of the late Cecil Watson, the Lord be good to Cecil. We meet them at one of our local watering holes, and Cecil, which I thought was very funny, you know, just coming back and what you were saying, very few cars. Cecil said, I'm going out on the bike. He said, I was knocked down by a car. And there was only three or four.
I believe there was a guard, I might have the name wrong, and you can correct me, was that he used to be known as Pebbles. Do you have
Rowan.
And one of his specialties were if there was a few farmers were in town and they had the horses tied up, say outside Tynan's now or something like that, and he wanted them to be kind of moving on a little bit, so he'd get a few pebbles and he'd flick them at the horses like that. The horse would be getting all fidgety and he said, lads, you want to come out there and move those and go on off it, you know, while you're at it, you know, just
some wonderful characters.
You remember across the road from Moans's,
Westbury's.
And they had a car and they could actually bring it in the archway.
Yeah.
It was a baby Ford.
Oh, right.
And the car today, like any of the small cars today, wouldn't have a hope again.
No, that's right.
And cars every Sunday, this car was pushed out onto the North Main Street and polished up and got ready for the Sunday spin.
Oh, yeah.
Standing attractions of the year was Pasley's Old Men. Wouldn't be Christmas. But in those days, Christmas didn't start officially.
Yeah.
Until the 8th of December, which was the Feast of the Immaculate
Conception.
Everything, all the farmers came to town.
Yeah.
And then Horns, raisins, barn, bricks, candles, everything.
Yeah,
they'd all make an appearance then.
Things you wouldn't see during
the year.
Turkeys, you'd see them over Christmas. Now you have them every day of the week.
Yeah, that's right.
In those days, they were
a big treat then would be to have lemonade or something like that, because you'd never have lemonade normally, you wouldn't just be able to afford it, and you'd have that for Christmas. And I remember then sometimes they have these fancy soda things, and you'd put sort of a cordial into it, and
the siphons.
And the funny thing, even in those days, talk about recycling in those days, we used to recycle an awful lot of things. I remember in the shop down below, we'd have plastic crates everywhere, and Michael Cratty, who worked with us for many years, Michael's job was to be stacking them all up outside.
All the bottles went back.
Oh, that goes there, for instance, your own place, Pasley's.
Yeah.
I remember there was a shop in three sections.
That's right.
I remember during the war, there was no sweets, there was no confectionery, there was no latte. Then after the war, sweets started to gradually come in. And I remember the sweet section in the shop, you know, beside Condon's. There was a girl there in the shop, and I think she was the sister of the late Michal O'Neill's. Carmel was on them. And we were going in and out it, and she didn't mean more. Anyway, she said, I was in and out all day. I was getting like more than a quarter.
And people used to love coming into the main part of the grocery shop, because just at the front and left hand side was the Jacob's Biscuits display stand. And what it was in little glass covered boxes.
Yeah.
And you went in and you just took whatever you wanted, the biscuits, put them into an old bag, and off you went. And everything was loose tea, loose eggs.
Right.
There was no packaging. We were talking at one stage there about the fact that we were ecologically, we were very much green in those days.
Anyway, I suppose we've the cups drained now, so maybe it's time to
we could stay here forever.
There are so many stories to be told.
Thank you for the opportunity and for the invitation.
Lovely.
Thanks for coming. I'd love to sit down with you lads and have a little chat.
But me and all I've done.
The Street Down Memory Lane was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee. Presented by Liam McCarthy. Sound engineer, Paul Daly. Sound engineering and editing, Thomas O'Keefe. Produced by Thomas O'Keefe. Series producer, Angela Kearns. Researcher, Angela Kearns. We would like to sincerely thank all those who took part in this program for their time, and most of all, for the memories. A Community Radio Your Production.
They would wish me one more day to stay. But since it falls until my lot's